Gentlemen, to the August 13th edition of East Coast Bias. Today on the show, we discuss Tiger Woods winning the PGA Championship. We then discuss the Yankee surge and the Red Sox collapse, followed by Jason and I's 2007-2008 NFL sleepers, and it all winds down with the weekly fill, in which we talk about, ironically enough, about the Philadelphia Phillies and their push towards the playoffs. Let's begin, however, with Tiger Woods winning his second PGA Championship in as many years. He's done this himself in 1999 and 2000, and the guy is so dominant. He's now won more majors than the rest of the top 10 in the world ranking combined, and they have 12. How good is Tiger Woods, Jason?
Well, also, you could say that he's won more majors than every golfer that ever played except for one, if you want to look at it that way as well.
We could look at it that way.
Five away now from Nicklaus, I think, is the more important thing. Tiger was leading after rounds two and three, and when that happens, Tiger is untouchable.
Yeah, it was like 20-plus wins and no losses when leading after.
I would hope this is lucky 13 for Tiger, and it was good to see him kind of break through after what happened in the Masters and the U.S. Open
right.
This year, tied for second in both of them, and lost to Zach Johnson and Angel Cabrera, respectively, in those two. So it was good to see him break through, and after the tough year he's had with the passing of his father and his baby girl now in the world, you know, it's good for Tiger.
Yeah, it
and
certainly
not surprised
is.
That he won.
I'm not surprised. I mean, even though I can say I predicted him to win, predicting Tiger to win is, you know, not exactly something that doesn't happen very often. I mean, when's the last time, I mean, unless you talk about Michael Jordan, when you say, who's going to win, Tiger Woods or the field? That's how good this guy is.
And that's the
question. It's not like Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson. It's Tiger Woods or the field. And that's just a testament to how dominating he is at his sport.
That's a good point. And, you know, how many sports can you say that? That's kind of the point you were making.
Right.
Which is,
I mean, not since Jordan has there been a player in their respective sport that's, you know, is just basically just untouchable. I know this is his first major this year, but it's just the consistency of this guy. I think this is his fourth consecutive year with a major championship, and that's incredible to me. Absolutely incredible.
You said you predicted Tiger, and it's funny who I predicted to win. What happened to him?
Yeah, Sergio.
Actually disqualified, which I don't know much about PGA golf rules, but that is the stupidest rule if people know what happened to him. With his playing partner giving him the wrong score, then he signed
well,
it.
Well, I mean,
I know you're
supposed
to.
Let's be honest. I mean, he's a big boy. I mean, he can keep his own scorecard. It's his own fault that
you don't do that, though. You know that, right? You don't. You keep your playing partner's score, and then before you sign it, obviously. I mean, you keep your own, but that's the official one. Bo Weekly had his official one that is given in to the PGA,
right?
And he signed it, you know, I guess.
I understand that, but, I mean, come on. He's a big boy. Regardless.
Okay, that's your
regardless,
only argument.
Regardless, this entire thing we were talking about is about Tiger Woods. How dominant he is. Do you really, at the age of 31, he's certainly in his prime. I mean, I guess you could say that he's been in his prime for a number of years now. Does he, I'm not going to say beat, because I'm almost positive, without a shadow of a doubt, he's going to beat Jack Nicklaus for the most major wins. How much is he going to blow Jack Nicklaus out of the water in that regard?
23 majors, I'll say.
You'll say 23?
That's, man, I'm being
crazy.
I'll
go Price is Right and do 24 majors for Tiger Woods?
Well, you know, he's 31 and he only has 13, so 10 more. He probably has two dominant years left, I would say. Next year, you know, for some reason I have this number, 33, 34. Next 2-3 years, he can be dominant Tiger.
Right.
Where he wins, you know, maybe 3 out of 4, 2 out of 4 of the majors.
But then, the thing about it is that there's no second coming, though. There's no one after him where you can say, oh, okay, well, after Tiger is done, I mean, this guy is going to, you know, break out. There's no one there, you know? No one has won consistently enough to scream they are going to not be the next Tiger, but are going to be the next dominant player in the sport. Much like LeBron James has become the most dominant player in basketball after, you know, Jordan left. How long is it going to take for the next great dominant golfer to come up?
Well, there'll be nobody like Tiger because Tiger is
no,
the
definitely
best.
Not. No. I wasn't trying to imply that there's going to be anyone ever like him. Because, I mean, the guy is just, you know, one in a million.
I would like to mention that the round was close at points. Tiger was up one late in the round and held off Woody Austin and Ernie Ellis's charge, who both shot good rounds of 66 and 67. Ellis the 66. So it was good to watch, but, you know, I don't think you ever had a doubt that Tiger was going to win that yesterday. No.
And I mean, this has been discussed before. Does Tiger Woods winning this make it any less exciting or more exciting? Because you know how people say, well, Tiger Woods wins again, how monotonous and how boring. And I don't really think that's the case. I mean, it was a really good round of golf between Woody Austin, Ernie Els, and Tiger Woods leading into that fourth round yesterday.
I think it's people want to see Tiger win, right? I mean, that's,
I would assume so.
So the only thing that would be more exciting is when he finally comes from behind on a final day and wins. I mean, I think Tiger winning is exciting. I don't see, even in the fashion sometimes, because even in the fashion he wins sometimes, it's just because you give him a lead on Sunday, I'll put money on that he's not going to give it up, you know?
Well, no, his record, like we said earlier when we started discussing this, when leading on the final day is just ridiculous. I mean, the guy is the epitome of a closer. I mean, he's the Mariano Rivera, one could say, of the PGA.
Tiger gets his lucky number 13, and like we both predict, many more to come for Tiger.
Many more.
Major category. Well, to change gears a little, we switched to the diamond, and the Yankees are making a serious playoff run, I think most people would agree with. And
I
now are only
think so.
4 games behind the Red Sox for the AL East and tied for the AL wild card as of right now. Brendan, there are 3 options to pick from. Do they challenge for the division? Do they win the wild card, or do they miss the playoffs? What do you think about the Yankees' chances?
I think the Yankees will end up winning the wild card. Even though I know that the Red Sox are on the verge of a really big collapse, at one time the Boston Red Sox were up 14.5 games on the Yankees, and like you said, they've closed that gap considerably to only 4 games. The Red Sox are hurting right now because they do not have Curt Schilling in their starting rotation, and the Eric Gagne has looked absolutely atrocious in the relief role since he was brought over from Texas. But
I think we were talking about the Yankees here, but they
right,
did.
Well, I'm just saying, and this is the reason I was getting to my point was once the Red Sox get healthy, I think that they will not run away with the AL East, but I think that the Yankees will kind of trail off. They're not going to be they can't be this hot until the end of the season. It's just in fact, I mean, there's no way that they continue this torrid pace. I mean, they're 23-8 since the All-Star break, and like you said, they've cut that lead since May by 10.5 games. I think once the Red Sox get healthy, I think that the Yankees will kind of trail off, the Red Sox will pull away a little bit, and the Yankees will end up getting the wild card.
They swept the Indians this week, the Yankees did.
First time since 94.
And after the 3 games they had with Baltimore starting tonight, they play 10 critical games against division leaders Detroit and the Angels. So that will be a big stretch. The first is a 4-game set with Detroit at home, 3 away at the Angels, and then 3 at Detroit. So that would be a big stretch for the Yankees to try to gain ground, at least in the wild card picture, on Seattle, Cleveland, or Detroit.
Right, right.
And I agree with you. Wild card is probably the best. The Red Sox are too talented.
Well, you are a Yankees homer. I was kind of expecting you to say that they're going to overtake the Red Sox.
The pitching's still too much of a huge question mark. They don't have pitching.
I think that goes without being said.
I've tried to lie to myself and say that some of these guys can, pull it together, but right now I can't say that yet. But Pettit's pitching better. Wang goes tonight. Chin-Ming Wong, excuse me.
Wang.
And he hopes to bounce back after, of course, the last time out against the Blue Jays.
This is a PG show, I might add, Jason.
And we're using names of players. And...
Well, Jason Giambi, who is back from injury, has hit 2 home runs in the same amount of days, so he's really provided some pop in that lineup. And you were right. They don't have any pitching. Once their offense kind of starts cooling down a little bit, I think that's when they're going to start losing games again. But it's certainly impressive that the Yankees, and I can't reiterate this enough, who are 14.5 games back in the AL East, are suddenly only 4 games back of the Red Sox. So, I mean, I counted out the Yankees early in the season. I said they weren't even going to make the playoffs. I probably am going to have to eat my own words and write you some kind of apology, Jason.
You can never count out the Yankees just because of the money on the payroll.
Apparently not.
They have too much talent every year. As much as people want to dislike them, you can never count them out. And I would say wild card right now. I'm not going to be crazy and say anything else.
Okay.
But yes.
Wild card it is then. Well, in our next segment, we're going to switch gears over to the NFL. The 2007-2008 year is almost upon us. For us, the Eagles begin their preseason game this evening against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Plenty of preseason games have already started. I have football Gatorade in my veins. I'm totally set for the upcoming season. And me and Jason are going to give you 2 of our NFL sleepers for the oncoming season. My first sleeper was Brandon Jackson, running back for the Green Bay Packers. Former Nebraska standout is probably going to win the starting role over Vernon Morency, who right now is considered to be the current favorite, but Jackson is, I think, just, he's had comparisons to Amon Green, who was a pretty darn good running back for the Green Bay Packers during his stint there. So I think Brandon Jackson is going to get over 200 touches. I think he's going to rush for around 800, 900 yards, and think he's going to be a solid performer, about 6 or 7 rushing touchdowns. And from what I've heard from the Packers training camp, he is great out of the backfield, so he could be also another great weapon for Brett Favre to utilize this season. What about you, Jason? Who do you have for your first sleeper?
The Eagles actually play the Ravens tonight, I would have liked
to. Is it the Ravens?
Yes. And
I thought they were playing the Steelers.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I disagree, though, with the Brandon Jackson, but I don't know if Green Bay has a good enough offensive line to support any time. Kind of running game this year. I do like the pick of Jackson. I just don't know how much you can expect from him. And from what I've seen from Morency, I would probably give him a starting edge, but I'm not the Green Bay Packers head coach, so Mike McCarthy. But anyway, to mine, I have Vince Young. Some people might think that's too obvious. It's not breakout player or sleeper,
well,
really.
Most people would say that. How would he be considered a sleeper considering he had his breakout season last year?
He didn't have a breakout season last year, though.
Really?
I know it was 2,200 yards and 12 touchdowns, but his passer rating was low. It was like 66. Completion percentage was low. It was like 51. So, and it was his rookie year. You can't have, he took over the reins right away after they figured out Kerry Collins couldn't be their quarterback. And so I wouldn't consider, because I at least had no expectations for him now. And now that it is his team this year, he fills into that role as a leader now. So this will be his first year in that role. Before, when we were preparing for this segment,
right,
you did make a good point by saying the lack of weapons or the lack of free agency or that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that
just
the did in the offseason.
The non-replacement on the Titans management part to put anything around Vince in regards to any sort of weapons. Like I said, they lost Drew Bennett and they lost Travis Henry. And I think Travis Henry was huge to that team because he rushed for 1,300 yards, took some pressure off of Vince Young to do everything. I think that Vince, while I will never say that I don't think Vince is at one point going to be a great quarterback, this year I think it's going to be even tougher for him because he's going to have to do a lot of things by himself.
I think they will be a bad team. I just think he'll have even rise to the occasion more and have a better year than he did last year. And they do have Chris Brown, who's a decent running back in the backfield, and Lendell White hopefully can play at the level that people think he can play at the way he did at USC.
One would hope. Certainly the Titans are hope.
Kind of the game last year that stands out with Vince to me was that Giants game. And most people will remember that for the Mateus Kiwanuka, where he thought he sacked Vince Young and completely let him go. I don't know if you remember that, Brennan.
Oh, I do. I do.
But that was kind of his breakout game, 250 yards, two TDs. And they were trailing by 21, and they came back for the win, 24-21 over the Giants, when the Giants were mightily struggling.
And that was a nice thing to see on Sunday.
But also, one more point about Vince. He will be the first player to break the Madden curse. And there will be no curse for him this year.
You would hope so.
Despite the fact that he's on the cover of the newest Madden, which comes out.
Well, who's your second sleeper?
My second is Alex Smith. And again,
another quarterback.
Do you want to – you might disagree with that this upcoming year might be his breakout year. But after what he did in his rookie year, where he threw for one touchdown and 11 interceptions, and everybody thought that this guy was going to be a bust, they thought that this spread offense, shotgun, wheeling quarterback from Utah that's never played in anything remote to a pro-style offense
right.
is going to struggle. You know, he turned it around last year, almost threw for 3,000 yards and 16 touchdowns. And with a guy like Frank Gore behind him, that helps you.
And his best receiver on the team at the time was Antonio Bryant. So,
which isn't saying too much.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not like he had a lot of weapons to throw to.
To that point, they have gotten new weapons in Daryl Jackson and Ashley Lilly. So he should have some weapons to throw to.
And a healthy Vernon Davis.
Healthy, yes. And a possible playoff team this year.
Possibly. I mean, the NFC West is, I mean, like we said during our NFC West preview, the West is a crapshoot. So I really think that the NFC West, to get off topic real quick, will be decided by injuries. Whoever stays the healthiest in the NFC West is going to end up winning that division.
I think that goes without saying, but okay.
Yeah.
So who is your second player?
Mine is one that's been talked about a lot. It's not really a surprise to anyone, although he is considered a sleeper. I'm talking about running back from Atlanta, Jarius Norwood. Explosive runner. He's going to find a lot more touches this year, especially with Warwick Dunn, who's not only 32 but is also injured. This guy averaged 6.4 yards per carry last year, had four runs of 20-plus yards, and this was only on 99 rushing attempts. And with new head coach Bobby Petrino, I mean, who is an offensive genius at Louisville, I see Jarius Norwood putting up some ridiculous numbers in Atlanta this year.
I hate to be a negative Nelly, Brennan. I just wanted to bring this up. The Vince Young point you made was that the lack of running back would hurt his game, or lack of weapons, lack of running would affect his game.
Yeah.
Now, couldn't you make that case for Norwood, who now will have Harrington in front of him, and I don't think anybody will be scared of Joey Harrington.
Well, you could, but, I mean, plenty of teams. I mean, Chester Taylor last year went against 8 in the box on a consistent basis, had over 1,000 yards rushing.
But I would say he's not Chester Taylor.
Well, one is only going to find out. Well, right. No, we're right, and these are sleepers, and these are predictions. So we'll definitely see who's right and who's not. I just think personally that Jarius Norwood is just a running back that is going to one day be a perennial Pro Bowler, and I just have high expectations for him. Just basing this on the fact of seeing him last year play and watching him make those cuts and just exploding out of the backfield, it was just very impressive to see this kid run.
Maybe, I do like Norwood. I like that he's a quick little back and
right.
Mississippi State graduate.
A little powerful, too, for a guy.
Pro Bowl might be a little hard for you know, with the likes of Sean Alexander, Steven Jackson, Frank Gore, Brian Westbrook, and Clinton Portis.
Well,
but
it's not, I'm not saying he's going to be it this year.
Yes.
But I definitely see a Pro Bowl in his future.
Since we are mentioning predictions for the upcoming season, we would also like to say that possibly a week or two, we will be doing some type of fantasy football special, analyzing positions, maybe doing a mock draft between each other. So look forward to that. And if you have any suggestions for that,
suggestions or questions, definitely hop on missioncanny.blogspot.com and shoot one of us, either me, Brendan, or Jason, an email, and we'll definitely get to it on the show.
Well, to get into our final segment today, this week in the Weekly Fill, we will be talking about the start of the Eagles football season, which is tonight against the Baltimore Ravens, Brendan, and the Phillies, who won the Braves series last night with the Howard home run was the difference in the ball game, 5-3. So, what is your take? And you start wherever you would like, Brendan.
All right,
Eagles,
well,
Phillies.
Before we continue, I don't know why it was, but ever since I saw the preseason schedule for the Eagles, I, for the life of me, thought that they were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers this evening. I don't know why.
Are you calling me a liar, Brendan?
No, I'm not. I just couldn't believe it when you said that they were playing the Ravens. I don't know. It just... I'm confused. Anyway,
so
I'm going to get into the Phillies. Shane Victorino, luckily, is beginning his rehab assignment today. Double A Reading. He could return to the lineup for the weekend series against the Pirates. That's great news. Quick stat to throw out: ever since our great second baseman Chase Utley went on the DL, the Phillies are actually 9-6. So they're keeping afloat. Three games above 500 in their last 15, which is encouraging to say the least, and it's mainly because of the play of Ryan Howard and Aaron Rowand. These guys have been playing very well. Greg Dobbs at certain points, Jason Wirth has been playing a really good right field, and the pitching, with the exception of Adam Eaton, who we may get into a little bit later, is pitching well. Moyer pitched well last night. The bullpen is finally healthy. In last night's game, the bullpen struck out 4, gave up no hits over 2 2/3 innings pitched.
Wow.
So it's really promising. And yeah, I know, the bullpen statistic was really impressive, and I wanted to share that with everyone.
And that was a good stat, Brennan. But
you
brought up Chase Utley, so I will mention Tadahito Aguchi.
Tadahito.
The first Japanese player that the Philadelphia Phillies have ever had. And, he's filled in nicely, and, that was a good trade they made, and I know they didn't do a heck of a lot during the trade deadline, but that was a good move, and hopefully a lot of talk around town is that when Chase gets back, which now appears to be later and later than we expected at first.
Yeah, September is what they're calling for.
That Aguchi could possibly move to third base, and kind of – that's pretty much the only position I view that's – maybe underachieved or maybe not what we expected to get out of.
Wes Helms really hasn't produced the way that we thought he was going to. And while Abraham Nunez, who made a great defensive play last night, and we've said this again and again about him, is that he's just not an everyday guy because he's just not a hitter. He can't hit well. It goes without
saying. He's
great
defensively, though.
Great defensively. Awesome defensively. Awesome defensive replacement. Just a guy that you cannot start every day because he's a liability in the lineup.
I agree with you. We got, I believe we got Kyle Loesch tonight. Yes, we do. We got Kyle Loesch.
Oh, is he back? I wasn't sure when he was going to start again after that first inning fiasco and when he got beaned by that line drive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's nice to know that our other trade deadline deal is actually going to be playing for us.
And hopefully we could, a sweep of the Nationals, the lowly Nationals, would be nice.
Would be very nice, and it would also be very nice if the Braves and the Mets both lose.
And one more point I'd like to make about the Phillies is I wouldn't count out Ryan Howard for the MVP. I think especially if we stay in it for a long enough time, maybe Chase Utley coming back will actually hurt his chances for that. If you understand what I'm saying.
I understand perfectly.
Because that'll take some votes away. Because I'm sure when Chase gets back, he'll play at the same level he's been playing.
Yeah, well, we should trade one of those guys, so that the other one has a better chance of winning the
NL
MVP award.
Yeah.
Because that was obviously the point you were making, right?
Yeah, no, but obviously I didn't mean that.
I know. I'm just giving you a
hard time. Let's switch to football. What do you Eagles start up tonight against the Ravens?
Express with the right amount of adjectives how excited I am. And the funny thing is that it's just a preseason game. Doesn't matter. Nothing of note is really going to happen. Donovan McNabb's not even going to be in the preseason opener. More than likely, our new draft pick Kolb will be starting the game. But I just can't wait to see how everyone has progressed and how everyone looks. It'll be interesting to see Bunkley and how well he's going to be playing. It'll be interesting to see what's happening in the secondary. We mentioned before in a previous show that Sheldon Brown may actually end up losing his starting corner role to Will James.
There's no way.
Jim Johnson was very, very impressed with Will James in training camp, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in that regard.
I am looking forward to seeing Jeremy Bloom return punts. I'm a big Jeremy Bloom fan, and I'm not trying to expect the world out of him. I'm not trying to say he's going to be Dante Hall or Devin Hester back there.
He was pretty darn good when he played at Colorado, though. So
that, and you got to respect the guy who's an Olympic gold medalist at skiing. So, and we have one of the big problems that the Eagles lineup faces. So hopefully he could fill the role that they need him to fill at punt returning,
as long as the person returning punts is no longer Reno Mahe or kickoff returns, I will be very happy, because watching that guy try to return punts had my stomach in knots constantly. And he just was never, he doesn't even have enough speed. Remember that game where he broke out that kickoff return and he was shagged down by the opposing team's players? It was just like, anyone else that would have broken that would have been a touchdown. No ifs, ands, or buts. That was a touch. That would have been 6 points on the board. But Reno, because he's so freaking slow, got caught by the other team, and it was just killing me. Even though he ran 64 yards, I was actually pissed off at him.
It is Reno, we've grown to come to expect that, wouldn't you say, Brennan?
I would. It's just, I mean, they have options. They have Ryan Motes, Jeremy Bloom. Well, they didn't have Jeremy Bloom last season, of course, but they have Ryan Motes. They have other options. It's just, I couldn't believe that Randy Reed and special teams coordinator, was it Harbaugh?
Jim Harbaugh, I believe, yeah. Yes. John, Jim?
I think Jim.
Jim.
We'll go with Jim.
It's actually John. Jim was the quarterback.
Right, okay. And
I think it's John.
I couldn't believe that they left him in that long, because he just didn't have breakout speed. And, I mean, you need that on the kickoff returns. I mean, our special teams was one thing last season and has been a thing for a long time that I think that we can improve upon. And with Reno Mahe, I think that's just a downgrade. I think anyone else on our team would be an upgrade over Reno Mahe in regards to the return game.
To wrap this up, I am actually looking forward to one thing on the Ravens side of the football, the debut of Willis McGahee, even though he won't get much carries or yards.
Heck no.
It looks.
They're going to baby him the entire preseason.
You know,
he's way too important to that
finally
team.
The Ravens will finally have a dynamic running back, so we'll see what that could possibly
do. What do you mean finally? They did have Jamal Lewis at one time, my
friend.
But
that's why I said the word dynamic. Jamal was, you give it to him behind center and let him bull over three guys.
Right.
McGahee can make people miss, and he's got speed, so.
Okay, I got you. Well, boys and girls, that is all the topics we have for today, August 13th. We want to thank you guys again for listening to us. We appreciate it. We said earlier in the show, please feel free to email us. Both of our emails are at the top of the site, missioncanny.blogspot.com. We will, this week, keep updating our blog regularly for you guys with some original stuff, mainly by myself, Brennan Canny. We'll also give you guys some updates on what happens during the course of the week. We look forward to seeing you guys on Friday, and hopefully by then we will have our first AFC divisional preview with the AFC East. I want to thank you guys again for listening. I am Brennan Canny.
And I am Jason Mish.
And this was East Coast Bias. We will see you guys on Friday.
Peace.